welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page podcast. This is Jessica, and we are welcoming back an awesome guest whose books are like the equivalent of candy. They are just so well written and so much fun, and the covers are so beautiful. So I'm going to stop talking about them, and I'm going to let our guest introduce herself and tell us about this book that we'll be talking about today.
Hi, Jessica. I'm Deanna Rayburn. I'm the author of the Veronica Speedwell novels, and my latest release is called An Impossible Imposter. And you're right, the covers do look like candy. I wish I could take credit for them, but I can't. That's all down to the Berkeley Art Department doing beautiful, beautiful things with these covers. But yeah, they are pretty luscious. The series is a Victorian mystery series featuring a butterfly hunter as the main character. She is very much her own woman. And she has a dishy sidekick who accompanies her on her adventures because she stumbles over a lot of dead bodies, you know, as you do.
As you do. And I have to say, it's not just the covers that are like candy. Your writing is like candy. It's like the equivalent of like a sweet wine. You know, you sit down.
Oh, I love that.
It goes down so smoothly. And as you're turning your pages, you're just like, oh, what's going to happen next? Which is beyond delightful, as is Veronica and Stoker. So, okay, this book was interesting. And I don't want to spoil anything.
I was going to say, we have to do this without spoilers.
No spoilers. This is okay, a spoiler-free zone. But it's funny because just randomly scrolling through Goodreads, they're just like, everybody's mind is blown. And my mind is blown as well. What number is this in the Veronica?
This is number seven. This is number seven. I don't actually read reviews.
They're all good.
I feel like those are for readers. That's a chance for readers and booksellers and librarians and, you know, bookstagrammers and everybody else to have conversations. Those things are not written for me. So I don't go in that space.
Right.
My editor did tell me enough that I know it got a starred review in Library Journal. And I was like, okay, phew.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it got
good. I was super nervous writing this one for reasons that you will understand.
I do.
And we can talk about when you stop recording.
Of course. So it was very funny to me because, you know, like I won't go on Goodreads until after I finished a book. And if I have just sort of questions about it, I'm curious, you know, if I'm curious if other people picked up on it. But with this one, I was just like, wow, there is so much here. I'm curious what
there are things to unpack.
So much to unpack, and everybody's mind is blown. So let's talk a little bit about this one. So Veronica and Stoker, after lots of will they, won't they, had become a yes, they will.
Yes, they do.
They do. But you don't want to end a story there, you know, and this is like what's so great about it. You want to see that they're how they interact together, how a relationship between somebody as free-spirited and her own woman as Veronica would work, you know, and it's a payoff, but at the same time, if everything was always 100% hunky-dory, it wouldn't necessarily drive the story along, nor would it feel natural. It would feel like an ending, which this is very much not. In a way, it's a new beginning. Again, without too many spoilers, tell us a little bit about the plot of this story and how you decided to drive it to this point.
Well, you know, the relationship between Veronica and Stoker and the relationships they each have with their found family, because they have, and in Stoker's case with blood family, because his brothers make appearances and roll up from
yes.
I love his brothers. that's kind of the overarching thing that runs through all of the books. And so those are relationships that I get to, I get the best of both worlds, because I get to stay in the same universe and explore these relationships over a really long arc. And then within each book is the single puzzle that will take up that book that sometimes involves, you know, you get to see some of the developments of the larger picture within each individual kind of installment. They can be read independently with no problem. You don't have to read in order. But because I'm writing a series that is, like right now I'm writing book 8, I'm under contract for book 9, but I don't know how much further we go beyond that, you know, because that's a decision that's really up to my publisher. So, you know, do we do 10? Do we do 20? We don't really know at this point. So I'm trying to look at it with an eye to what would be happening logically to a couple right at this stage in their relationship, but also with an eye to, do I get a chance to tell a lot more of their story down the road when I actually don't know if I will get that chance? So it's a really interesting kind of juggling act where I'm trying to keep all of these things going at one time. In this particular story, Veronica and Stoker are asked to do a favor for Sir Hugo Montgomery, who is the entirely fictitious head of Special Branch in Scotland Yard, which is not fictitious. Special Branch actually existed at this time. And Special Branch is tasked with a lot of, they're kind of a precursor to MI5 or MI6. They are tasked with unusual and very important security. And one of the things they're responsible for is kind of the well-being of the royal family. And because Veronica has this sort of distant, murky connection to the royals, she has been drawn into some of their misadventures. But this is very much about a personal favor that Sir Hugo asks of her. There is a young man who is purporting to be a long-lost heir back from the dead, and there's not really a way to prove it one way or the other, but Sir Hugo realizes that in this young man's travels, if he's the real person he's claiming to be, he may have crossed paths with Veronica. And so she may be able to give him a definitive answer. Yes, this is the guy I know. No, it's an imposter. And so he, you know, kind of leans on Veronica and Stoker to do him a favor. And so they hair off to the wilds of the Devonshire Moors to check this guy out.
I was thinking in a strange way while I was reading this, you know, this whole idea, is this person a lost heir turned up? It seems like a Victorian elder scam in a way, like a grandparent.
Well, actually, you know, here's the really fun thing is it is inspired by a real life case that happened in Victorian England. There was a very like, it made headlines of every newspaper all across the empire. And it was called the case of the tit-borne claimant. And it was very much a similar situation to what I've set up. You have a young man who's lost in a shipwreck. His family's notified that he's dead. They're very sad. Life goes on. And two decades later, someone shows up and says, oh, hey, it's me. I'm alive. And, you know, of course, at the time, there's no DNA testing. There's no way to prove that somebody who left home at the age of 20 is not this person who shows up as a 40-year-old making a claim on this estate. And so it absolutely electrified British society and the public in general. Like, everybody took sides. Is this guy telling the truth? Is he an imposter? And it was the news story for quite a long time. It dragged through the courts and everybody had their opinion about whether he was telling the truth or whether he was just an enormous fraud. And so I thought, ooh, that would be a fun thing to play with. And then it occurred to me that, you know, if this is a person who has supposedly been on the other side of the world, the likeliest person for him to have crossed paths with in my universe is Veronica, because she's a butterfly hunter who travels the world in the course of her work. So that's how that whole thing came about. And it was a great deal of fun to play with. But it also kind of came at a really important juncture in Veronica and Stoker's relationship. And, you know, I never envisioned that their path together was going to be just day one, happily ever after, simply because these are two people with, I mean, it's not that they have baggage, it's that they've got massive steamer trunks of baggage, both of them. And that, you know, that can be a tricky thing to navigate, especially when you're in a relationship that is, you know, kind of unconventional by Victorian standards, not out of the realm of possibility, not completely unheard of, but certainly not the norm of what society would expect of you. So that it gave me a chance to play with that at the same time.
Yeah, I really liked that. And I think even by non-Victorian standards, I feel like it makes it more real for readers. Mm-hmm. If it was just, and then they got together, fade to black. First of all, it had been building up for a while. And as you mentioned, these are people with steamer trunks of baggage, but like relationships are messy, even if your baggage mm-hmm. fits in, like, you know, a small purse. Relationships are messy. People are messy.
You know, relationships can be messy. And Veronica always struggles with the fact that she has been independent since she was 18 years old, in a way that many, many Victorian, the vast majority of Victorian women were not. She has gone out and earned a living. She's traveled the world, and she is a fiercely independent person. And as much as she adores Stoker, which of course she does, they're obviously soulmates. You know, she tells him at one point that they're made of the same stuff. They're quicksilver when everybody else is mud. As much as she adores him, she is absolutely adamant about not losing herself in this relationship. And that's, you know, you read letters and diaries from Victorian women, and there were a lot of women who were actually really worried about that, about, you know, having to take on this secondary role in a relationship and having to put their own talents and their own unique abilities to the side in service of some man. And that's the last thing Veronica Speedwell is ever going to do.
It really is. And there, just going back to it, like, there was this really great line in the beginning where she was talking about going for a walk with Stoker. And I'm trying to remember exactly what she said. You know, it was like going for a walk with, it was an exotic cat. No, I cannot remember what kind of exotic cat it was, but it was just, it was just sort of, it was so great. And so it just, so her to say,
you know, Stoker's a lot like a tame panther, you know.
He
walks around and he's had this aristocratic upbringing, and he has, you know, exquisite table manners, and he can dress beautifully, and he knows the difference between addressing a bishop and a papal legate. Like, I mean, he would know everything in society. But there's also this extremely, you know, kind of rough and ready side to him, because he's rejected all of that. He ran away and, you know, did his own thing. And he is very much a man who lives by his own lights. And
yeah,
you never really know when he's going to turn feral again.
Pet lynx. That is the term that she uses. Pet lynx. Mm-hmm. So the way the story unfolds, and this is, like, again, I feel like we're skirting around a lot of stuff, and I'm not going to go there. Was it really difficult to decide when you were going to drop certain things? Going back over, like, from the beginning, did you know that things were leading here?
You mean from the beginning of the series?
Oh yeah.
I had an idea that this was going to be a development that cropped up. That, you know, I always had an idea of what things were going to cause problems for Veronica and Stoker. And it's a matter of figuring out where to drop which problems, and kind of a logical progression of, okay, you know, who's being the difficult one in this book, you know, because you have to, not every situation is kind of engineered or steered by the same person. Sometimes they get involved in mysteries because it's on Stoker's behalf. Usually it's Veronica saying, hey, let's go and do this thing, because she's very intrepid. She's very curious. She's very dynamic. And Stoker's like, I just want to have a little peace and quiet in my workshop. please, woman. So it's usually Veronica, but then, you know, we've had occasional books where it's been a member of Stoker's family who needs their help, or, you know, Stoker himself in one of the books kind of needs a champion. And Veronica's adamant that they're going to solve this mystery and fix this problem, you know, for him. So it's a matter of kind of, I try to alternate a little bit whose baggage is going to come out and, you know, what complicated things they're going to have to deal with at any given time. And, you know, the further we get into the stories and the deeper we're able to dig into their pasts, the more things that come to light and the more people they bring in from their found family, or like I said, Stoker's real family, you know, that just expands their universe even more. There are people who are present in almost every book that I never conceived of when I wrote book one, A Curious Beginning. You know, J.J. Butterworth did not exist. Julian Borland did not exist. Even Stoker's eldest brother, Tiberius, didn't really exist in the first book. You know,
what?
Tiberius is not introduced. He's mentioned very briefly, but we don't meet him until the second book. That's when he's a fully fleshed out character. And, you know, I had one idea of what I was going to do with Tiberius. You know, he's the head of the family. He's just inherited the title. He's, you know, big man boss of all the Templeton veins. I had specific ideas of what I was going to do with him. And as I wrote his character, I changed them all just because of the fact that I had so much fun with him and I wanted to see a lot more of him. So I made him far more complex than I originally intended to do. And, you know, now we see Tiberius at least every other book, if not more often, because he's turned into this really fun supporting character who has, you know, he's got baggage of his own. Like, we did an entire book on Tiberius's baggage. They offer me a lot of scope for doing a lot of different things. And I just kind of have to judge from book to book, whose turn is it to you know, get that, you know, that knapsack of past unpacked.
So you mentioned you are working on the next book. Are you working on anything else at the moment?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. In September is the release of my very first contemporary. It is a book about four female assassins who are 60 years old. They are hitting retirement and they have to band together to take out the organization that they work for because they realize they are being targeted themselves. And it is called Killers of a Certain Age.
I love it so much. I think the first time we ever interviewed you, you mentioned that very, very briefly. And I was like,
it has been in the works for so long.
Yeah.
By the time it's published in September, it will be more than 3 years since I started it. And this book has driven me to the very brink. I have no comfort zone left as a writer. Everything I was terrified to do, I did for this book, but I love it. I'm super proud of it. I can't wait for it to come out. I want to do more contemporary things now because it was just, at the end of the day, it was so much fun to write. It was great to have that experience and kind of get into a different world because I've written a lot of Victoriana. And so it was just so
awesome. Well, I cannot wait for that. And I can't wait to see what happens next in Veronica Speedwell as well. Really quickly, are you reading anything that you enjoy currently?
Yes, I just finished Swan Dive by Georgina Paskogan. She is the first Asian American soloist with the New York City Ballet. And she wrote a memoir, which is, she's known as the rogue ballerina because she's such a badass. And the memoir was great fun. It's a really quick read, fascinating. I love to read memoirs by women who have very different lives than I do. And hers was just really good. And I'm very much looking forward to Jesse Sutanto's Four Aunties and a Wedding, which is the follow-up to last year's Dial A for Aunties, which I love.
Yes, so much fun
mysteries. Yeah, very fun, and you know, the perfect antidote to gloomy weather or, you know, whatever's going on right now. They're perfect reads to brighten your day.
And I have to name drop, because we name dropped you when when we spoke, Sherry Thomas with the Lady Sherlock.
Oh God, yes. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Sherry and I joke about the fact that the Venn diagram of our readers is just a complete circle. Because yeah. When you're waiting for the new Lady Sherlock, you can read Veronica. When you're waiting for the new Veronica, you read Lady Sherlock. So it all works out.
It fits together very, very well. And it was so funny.
They do.
When we interviewed her, I had actually gotten in late to the Lady Sherlock game. And I was talking to her and I said, oh, by chance, do you happen to know Deanna Rayborn? Because like, I feel like there's a kindred spirit going on. And she's just like, Deanna's lovely.
Yeah. She and I always say very nice things about each other, behind each other's back. We do know each other. We're pals, and she's the best. I adore her. She's got this amazing, I don't get to see her nearly enough. Because we live in separate states, but she's got this just phenomenally dry sense of humor, and I adore her, and she's the best. And so we're kind of publishing mates, you know, we explore the same genres and the same time periods. And so it's just, it's lovely. I love to be able to flog her books because I think she's phenomenal.
So check out the newest Veronica Speedwell novel. When is it officially on shelves? Is it on shelves yet?
February 15th.
February 15th.
Yes.
Okay. So on library shelves everywhere, on bookstore
library shelves everywhere. Thank you, librarians.
You're welcome. And thank you for writing these fun books.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me back to chat.
Come back for your Assassins book and, of course, the next Veronica book.
I would love to.
All right. It is a date. Once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest was
Deanna Rayborn. Thanks, Syosset.
Oh, thank you, Deanna. We are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.